Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Ross Simmons. Ross Simmons is an origami artist and Instagrammer who was able to quit his 9-to-5 as a web developer and turn his hobby for origami into a full-time job. I know this sounds really esoteric, but he's got a huge following on Instagram, and it's a really dynamic story of how he got started and how he was able to turn a passion into a full-time thing. Anybody thinks that their quest to do something that's too off the beaten path and might not be a viable revenue source, well, they might find themselves wrong listening to Ross's story. So here's a really interesting guy. Here is Ross Simmons.
All right, I'm here with Ross Simmons. We're talking in the pregame. We're going to get into origami. I've never done anything like that before. That's cool. But there's like more to meets the eye here when you look at his Instagram page, which I did. Again, today, you know, we're talking about the animation, and there's one in particular video that like just goes into like, you know, so many different types of like origami. Like, you know, I was like, oh my God, I can't imagine that you would do that. You know, he's in South Africa, which is, I have a friend that grew up, born and raised in South Africa. He was a diamond dealer, nightclub promoter, DK. DK, you're listening, as a shout out to you. He was like 5'4", and he was a soft-spoken guy. And I'll kick it. This is a good way to kick it off because you're in South Africa. And there'd be like 1,000 people in the nightclub and like 500 people waiting to get in on Wilshire Boulevard in LA. And then these had these huge bodyguards, and he'd be wearing his trench coat. And it's so unassuming. They're like, DK, what do you want us to do? He's like, fuck it. He was always tired, you know, because like promoters are always tired promoting 7 days a week. You know, it's like, and they're over like people like DK. Yeah, I love you. You know, and he's like, always the same thing. He's like, DK, what do you want to do with all those people? He's like, fuck it, let them all in. You know? So I imagine like I only have a few friends from like South Africa, but they're all pretty laid back. Would you say that is, or how would you describe that?
Man, well, look, I'm not letting people into clubs and I'm not, you know, fighting them off to keep them away there, but South Africa definitely South Africa is referred to as the Rainbow Nation, whether it's just our country that calls us that or we are known globally for that. But and it's for that very reason, we just have so many different cultures, so many different races here. And it makes for such a cool place to live because, yeah, there's just, you know, there's just so much going on. It makes it difficult at times, obviously. I mean, we have quite a negative history as well with apartheid, which was, you know, I mean, it was a horrible thing. But now, you know, since 1994, things are just that we're trying to change. We're trying to come together, and it is happening, and it's amazing, especially in the bigger cities, which is, it's cool to be part of that. I live in Cape Town, which is small little fishing village, the bottom of Africa. And I love it here. It's definitely an international city. If you've never been out here, I mean, make a turn if you can. It's far away. I mean, it's not easy to get here. It takes a long flight from pretty much anywhere. But a beautiful place, beautiful people. And yeah, I feel very, very honored and privileged to actually come from here.
It's on my list and I am going to do it. All right, let's get down to it. Were you born and raised in South Africa?
I was. I was born in, I guess, in the central part of South Africa, in a little town called Welkom, pretty much. Moved to Johannesburg. Well, my parents moved to Johannesburg when I was, I think, 3 or 4 years old. I grew up in Johannesburg. I was there for my entire life up until about 27. I was 27 years old. I, you know, finished school there, did all my studies, and then I moved to Cape Town in 2010.
What did your mom and dad do for a living? I always ask that.
My mom did a couple of secretarial jobs, working at a doctor. She worked for a long time in for a signage company, just doing all the administration and, you know, whatever sort of came their way. My dad worked, he always tells a story. He had two interviews in his life. One was getting into a company called Baker's Biscuits, which is a very famous biscuit making brand here in South Africa. He saw that and he was just like, look, this, I don't think it's going to work for me. He then interviewed for a mining company, a gold mining company. Gold mining in South Africa, if you don't know, is, yeah, quite a big deal. We produce a lot of the world's gold. I don't really know the percentage, but it's a big amount. So he got that job and worked that job for 39 years, just worked his way up through the company, eventually became one of sort of higher management. And yeah, and he did pretty well for himself. Also, came from very humble beginnings, didn't have too many options for himself just because of his environment. And yeah, made a very, very successful life for himself and in turn for us. We were able to, yeah, to have things that not too many other people had, which, yeah, I'm very superbly grateful for.
Okay, so no clues and no indications of how we get into origami at all. Usually I try to find a dot to connect. I can't even begin. No, where. So I guess let's start with childhood and, like, you know, were you an artistic kid? I mean, what, you know, tell us, take us on the journey here, how this started.
I think I was always a different kid. I mean, I'm easy to get on with. I'm a very, very friendly human being, but I was always thinking a little bit differently. And I think for the longest time, neither my parents nor myself realized it was creativity that was actually driving those thoughts and those actions. You know, when everyone was doing the one thing, I was just doing something completely different. I have had a fascination with music and film since I was a kid. I remember the very first movie, I just thought about this the other day, that I ever saw. My dad took myself and my little brother to go see Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I don't know if you remember that movie.
Yeah, was that the first film that you saw in a movie theater?
That was the very first movie I ever saw in a film theater. And I remember that being like a very significant. I was young. I mean, I couldn't have been 5 years old. Yeah. And I remember thinking, like, wow, because that was a mix of animation and if you haven't seen the movie, go check it out. Actually, it's great.
Yeah. Animation and live action together. It was a very revolutionary film at the time with that sexy rabbit or bunny or whatever. And then that real actor over there, Hopkins. What was his name?
Mm-hmm. His name escapes me. But so I think, I mean, I just realized like recently that was actually a moment in my life that stuck with me for the longest time. Then, you know, just watching a whole bunch of cartoons and The Simpsons and, you know, all the stuff growing up, gummy bears. Animation was always a common theme. I used to make little flipbook animations as a kid, you know, like everyone did, your little stick man flying across the bottom of the page. And I would do that while I was supposed to be listening to the teacher. So, and then I picked up the guitar. My dad played the guitar, and not professionally. He just had an acoustic guitar around. And I watched him. I was like, cool, this looks like a cool, fun thing to do. Picked that guitar up when I was 15 and just played. I never, you know, never started a band, always wanted to. My pseudonym was sort of Calvin Rockstar. I was like this, I had this whole idea of becoming, at some point, all of us do, I think. So there was always a theme of, I guess, music, film, sound. When the first computer I ever got was like an old XT PC. That's another very common theme that I was around. It was, my dad was smart enough to get us a computer as young. I was 6 years old. And I remember sitting in front of that thing like, okay, this tool, this, you know, machine and I are really going to become good friends. And I was a little bit more reserved as a kid. And yeah, I didn't, again, because I was different, I think I found a lot of solace and a lot of, I guess, comfort in sitting behind the guitar, sitting behind the PC, making things that at the time were just things I was making. I don't want to say I was not inspired by my parents to you know, push those angles, but they were... Again, they were just like, well, you're never going to, I just think they thought that you're never going to get a job doing that sort of stuff. Like, I applied for film school and my dad was like, you sure you want to do that? So whenever I was trying these things, because I come from a conservative, relatively conservative background, and my parents an extremely conservative background, it was difficult to navigate like really what I wanted to do. I ended up going to hotel school of all places because
hotel I felt school like that. What do they call the hospitality industry?
I'm a trained hospitality manager. And I remember stepping in there thinking, why am I here? But I just felt I had to do it. I didn't do that well at school. I tried, but nothing interested me. Fortunately, my ninth grade teacher, she saw something in me and she was like, this kid needs to take art for the rest of his years. Basically till the 12th grade, they said, this kid needs to take art. And I couldn't really draw. I guess I had some creative something that this Mrs. Janey, I'll never forget Mrs. Janey. She helped me a lot. And that started making me realize, like, okay, maybe I'm creative, but I don't know how artistic I am, because my art wasn't great. I'll admit. I mean, there's still some things I show my friends and they're like, yeah, we remember that piece, man. Don't ever show anybody in terms of painting and drawing. But I still wanted to do it. And the things I was creating were different. I don't want to say I developed any sort of style. Come to think of it though, a lot of the work that I ended up doing in my 12th grade year was very geometric inspired, very geometry, very sort of hard edged color. I enjoyed working with color. And if I look at the work I'm doing now and I think back to that, it was like there was something there. I wasn't very mathematical, science and stuff didn't really work for me. But down the line, I can see that there were hints of, I guess, geometry was something that I understood of all the mathematical, disciplines. That was something that I had a slightly better idea of in navigating through and around. And then, just over the years, just continued playing around with sound and music. I eventually got onto varsity or university radio and did radio for 2 years. And that for me was the first time I was able to express myself. I didn't even realize I was good at it. I ended up getting a drive time show quite early. It was like 2 or 3 months in. So it was a big deal for me. I was just like, wow, I'm doing this thing that I feel like I'm pretty natural at. I enjoy speaking. I enjoy listening. I enjoy, trying to inspire people to do different things. And I think it definitely helped me from a content creation, before content creation was even a thing. This is sort of 2004, 2005. And later on, when I was putting out a piece of content on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, the format and the thought process was very similar to how I would produce a radio show. So because we had 3-hour radio shows, we had to do the whole thing, from editing little clips and make sure that everything was on time. And you're going to talk about this for this long, this. You're speaking to a single person. You're not speaking to a big crowd. So all those things kind of played into how I engaged with what eventually became quite a big audience on Instagram.
What was the content on it? Because now you're like the origami guru star, and I want to kind of get into like how big is this space and all that. But before we get there, like, what were you doing on Instagram then? Because what do you got, like 106,000 followers or something?
Yeah.
on Instagram.
Just over 100,000, yeah.
But what was it back then? I didn't dig down to like the very first, unless, or even if you have those posts up that you have up there now. What were you doing back then?
Yeah, man, I haven't taken a single post down. I know a lot of people, people change and they do the thing. But I think I kept the reason I started the project. It was a project. There's a lot going on, but let me just try and dial back to where it started.
Yeah.
So I eventually got a job in advertising as a web developer. I studied again. I was fortunate enough to study again. I got a national diploma, which was enough to get my foot in the door as a software developer, building websites. And I found myself enjoying the app website space. Worked there for 4 years in advertising. But while I was working there, I was like, I need to be working for myself. I need to be at least attempting. I was told by many people, I was like, man, your ideas are just too far out there and too different for you to work under somebody. And I had to learn. I'm glad I went through that, because I understood how to, I was always watching what the designers were doing, what the managers are doing, what projects worked, where I fit into the whole thing. And I was able to do my work as well. I had enough, energy and headspace to kind of notice what was going on around me. And in hindsight, I picked up a whole bunch of stuff, which eventually allowed me to start this, I guess, origami business or stop motion business. In 2013, I posted my very first Instagram picture, because I'd been into origami. I'd folded one thing, was the crane, the little tsuru, or they refer to it in Japanese as the tsuru, which is origami for crane, which is the small little bird that a lot of people start with. That's a very standard sort of thing. Yeah. I folded that, and I could eventually fold that with my eyes closed. I did that for years and years and years. I then started people started giving me books. They were like, you're clearly into this, and there's this whole other world of origami. Go check it out. There's dinosaurs and butterflies and whatever. So I just had this, this appetite for creating with what I love about origami is you start with a single square sheet of paper And that's the limit that you are restricted to. No cutting, no glue. And you have to come up with a design, either come up with a design, which again is something that I took the time to learn, which is actually designing origami, or following a step-by-step tutorial diagram, whatever.
And origami isn't a Japanese art form?
Yes, origami is, it comes from Japan, you know, I think the 1300s or something. And it was just a pastime. It was never anything that people used for anything more than, you know, I think making little mobiles and little things for kids and ladies and flowers and that sort of thing. So more decorative. Yeah. It was a more decorative art form. But the restriction of it, I think, because origami in the last, I guess, 70 or 80 years, origami design has filtered off into hundreds of industries. I mean, industrial design, medicine, architectural, anything, space travel. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that went on there. So I think I had this idea. I mean, back to how it kind of kicked off for me, I went and started posting just a little crane onto Instagram, opened my Instagram account. I didn't feel my life was worth posting, you know, selfies and this is in 2013. So it was just as Instagram, you know, started taking off globally. Definitely, I was definitely one of the front runners, fortunately, in South Africa, in Cape Town. And I still remember my now wife and girlfriend at the time, we had a competition to see who could get to 100 followers first. And I loved that. And we were like, okay, cool. So she was on like 89 and I was on like, I don't know, 75. And I think she beat me. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, anyway. And we subsequently both started businesses on Instagram. And she has now like 115,000 followers. So it was just interesting to think back to that time. But in 2014, I was like, I'm going to fold something every single day. I'd been inspired by a project by an old author named Wayne Dyer. He was a very, I guess he was a inspirational guy. Yeah, personal development. Yeah. And I remember watching a talk that he did once, and he said that he dedicated an entire year of his life, I think he was about 63, to meditating on the principles of a book called the Tao Te Ching. Tao Te Ching, I think it means way of life or life something. And he kind of translated all those parables and stories into daily meditation, something a little bit more, I guess, Western digestible. And I got that book and I kind of did the same thing. I was just meditating on these things daily. And I just thought at some point in my life, I'm going to do a full year project. I wasn't sure what it was going to be. And when 2014 rolled around, I was like, I'm posting this stuff on Instagram and I want to get better at origami. So how do I do that? And I needed to do it every day. And making it public was like, cool guys, I'm doing the thing. I'm posting every day. And I started like day one of /365. January 1st, 2014. And I was like, cool, let's see what happens. And I mean, I was working a job at the time. I was still building websites and stuff. I was working at quite a big agency, a global agency, actually. And people started saying like, wow, man, watching this project you're doing is pretty cool. I'm like, okay, like people are following me. That's interesting. I didn't even know these guys. And then as the year went on, I was like, I feel now is a good time to quit my job. I had a bit of money saved. I had freelance work coming in.
This wasn't producing any revenue though at the time, was it?
Nothing. No, not a cent. And I had never intended it for it to create a single cent. So what happened was I quit my job knowing that I could always do freelance web development work because that's the skill that I had. And I just thought the worst thing that can happen is I can go get a job again. Like I'd built up enough of a network to know like, cool, I'm going to go do this thing. And when I quit my job, I was like, okay, cool. So now I've got all this time on my hands and I had to learn how to find work. And somehow it's almost like there was a void that was created in my life and it was filled with positivity and people approaching me saying, listen, man, you need to build a website. Here we go. I've got this website for you. I can do this. And I was like, cool. Eventually someone said, look, we've got a lot of clients that need web development work. You can come and freelance in our space. And if we get any jobs, we'll just hand them over to you. So I was like, cool. Now I'm working for myself. I have these people who are kind of looking after me. They definitely know who I am. And I just continued putting my name out there. But the origami thing was just me. Now I'm sitting on like day 128 of 365 and I'm just posting. I just wanted a digital record at the end of the year of all these little characters and creatures that I'd folded. Yeah. And I wanted to see if I could do it every day. And I just kept posting. And it was again, it wasn't anything I thought, cool, where's this going to go? I just wanted to get to the end and be like, cool, I've got this collection, 365 designs. So, and the designs were all tutorials that I'd find in books on YouTube. There were tons of tutorials all over the place. So I didn't have the hardest part was picking what I was going to fold next.
Right.
And in the process, something that I'm very grateful I did is I started learning. I figured to myself, you know, people are actually designing these things. So how do they do that? Yeah. It's not something that you just pick up. Origami design is a whole nother like science and art in itself. I was very fortunate enough to meet someone who's a good friend of mine now, an origami associate. And he said, look, this is how you do it. This is the book you need. If you have any questions, basically ask me. And at the time, he was like the rock star of origami globally.
Jordan of, you know, I mean, you seem like you're the guy now, but like, but I don't know. It's not like I have like the top, you know, baseball card, or trading cards of like origami guys, but like you, I've never heard of anybody, you know, I was like, does that create a space? Is this an industry? I mean, there's always like a niche. You know, who is the guy before you? Who is the Michael Jordan of origami?
Well, it just happens to be this friend of mine. His name's Sipho Mabona. He's a Swiss South African. So he's got a South African tie as well. And weirdly enough, there are quite a few origami artists who come from South Africa. It's bizarre. It's like, it's weird. Like a lot of people that have written books, there's a guy named, I think his name's Nick Robinson. I'm not sure if he's South African, but anyway, there are quite a few South Africans who just happen to have an origami link somewhere. In terms of the Michael Jordan, I would say Sipho is. He's, in my eyes at least. I mean, because he was just a front runner in terms of, I don't know, just the designs. If you in front of your machine or you want to check him out, some of his work is
we're going to continue the story. But now, since you've done this so much, and you forced yourself into this world for so prolifically, are you the guy?
Well, I'm hoping that someone thinks I'm the guy. If somebody thinks I'm the guy, then
it's tough for you to say, yeah, I'm the guy. But let's face it, I bet you are doing this more. You do this every day now since, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was, you know, 2014. And I was folding every day anyway. So I just continued with the project. And the first time that someone said to me, like, hey, Ross, it just happened to be these people that I was sort of hot desking with. They said, listen, we've got this client. We've been doing all their social media stuff. And they've got this little store in a little town near Cape Town. And they want to do like this little origami curtain, you know, like a whole bunch of origami pigs that want to hang in the curtain. The place is called the Bacon Bar. So they thought it would be quite a cool idea, you know, to put this up. And they're like, cool, can you send us a quote for, I don't know, 250 origami pigs? And I was like, a quote, like, so you want me to, you're going to pay me for this, you know? Uh-huh. I was like, yeah, just send us a quote, tell us how long it's going to take you. And we'll see if it fits within their budget. And I was like, holy shit, like, what, I'm going to get paid for that shit? I'm like, I was doing it for nothing anyway. And I honestly never, it was really.
And what year was this? What year? This was 2014?
2014,
halfway through my first year.
Because nobody else was doing origami and my project, I guess, started, you know, locally at least, and people around me were supporting it.
Yeah.
Did that origami curtain. The same client asked for another, it was almost like an art piece, 400 butterflies that I sat and folded all by myself. But also what I did was I designed that pig and I designed that butterfly, which is something that I learned how to do, because had I taken somebody else's design, there's copyright laws and infringements there. So I think because I came from advertising and I've the music industry and movies and whatever, the copyright stuff always bugged me. I really like to live, you know, it's weird as a creative, but I like to live by the book in certain regards. I just don't want someone to turn around and go like, ooh, that's not your design, man. Right. You got that from so-and-so. So I was just like, I just need to learn how to do my own things.
Right.
So I did that, did the second project. And then by the grace of some divine power in August, I was contacted by Instagram and they said, hey man, we really love this. And this was in the early days of Instagram, still where the algorithm was, if you post, because I had a trick. The trick was to wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and post at 7 o'clock. Because what do people do when they wake up in the morning? First thing they do, Instagram, or, you know, just like, cool. And if I posted at the right time, the first thing people would see was my little origami thing. And they're like, oh, cool. And then it was just, that was the algorithm, as simple as that.
Yeah.
And then once Instagram featured me, it was a whole bunch of blogs that started contacting me, and it was just a wild ride all the way till the end of the year of me completing the project. So I knew like that, and that was just fuel for me to finish it. There were times where I was just like, wow, it's getting a bit taxing. And during this whole thing, I was just like, you know, I've done stop frame animations before, and it kills me, but I can't find these old stop frame animations. And it was random shit, like me and my friends lining it, sitting on chairs, and then we'd move the chairs like a little bit forward, a little bit forward, and create this whole stupid little story. It was just fun stuff that I did. And I was like, I understand how stop frame animation works. Let me see if I can do it with origami. Origami stop frame animation, having said that, is not wasn't a new thing. I mean, people, you can stop frame animate anything. And for those, you know, if you're listening and you don't know what stop frame animation is, it's like claymation where you see, or paper animation where it's just moving one increment at a time. You set it up, take the photo, move away, set it up, take the photo, move away. And it's tedious. It takes ages. But the result is beautiful every time. If you've watched Pinocchio, the latest Pinocchio movie, yeah, that is done with stop frame animation.
And one of your latest videos, I don't know whether it's pinned or it's one of your latest videos, but it is like a stop motion, but it's rapid fire showing all these different origami, you know, concepts. It's about, you know, several posts.
Yeah. Yeah, that was there's a couple of those that I've done. And that is my interest in tech. And my interest and my understanding of where I think the world's going. So that was me blending using AI tools, artificial intelligence tools, to see what an origami car would look like.
Right.
Or what would an origami Nike shoe look like? Like that was a project. I was just playing with ideas, because with these new AI tools, I mean, with ChatGPT, and there's a new one coming out every day. It's like the same as the NFT craze that happened, you know, a couple of years. Yeah. So, although those weren't any origami figures that I've actually designed, conceptually, I know now, okay, cool, if I want to design origami anything. And for me, it's more about showing people using social media. That's what I've been trying to do, is explain to them, like, these are tools that are available for us. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people, particularly artists and designers, are a little bit concerned about where this is all going, and the ethics of how the images have been created and drawn, what the inspiration was. And I get it, but, you know, hating the technology is not going to slow it down. So you might as well understand it, and let's just move with it. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bring these tools into my workflow and hopefully inspire one or two people to do the same, particularly artists and designers. I mean, I have a lot of conversations about this, this whole AI thing, and people are scared. People are like, oh man, you're feeding the enemy there. This is going to be the end of us. What are you doing? You know? And for me,
artists used to have to build their own brushes. Now they buy them. I mean, it's all relative, right? So,
exactly.
You know what? Let me ask you this, because I want to get a scope on this. Let's talk money. How did you have to create your own lane, I would imagine. There's not like some origami, like, you know, industry that is like, you know, lucrative, is it? Or like, what does this look like? Because you took your own lane and you created your passion into something that's sustainable. That's pretty unique. Yeah. What does this all look like?
Well, I mean, sustainable. I've been going for 9 years, and I keep every year, I'm just like, well, this is the end now. Someone's going to find out. And that's also, you know, imposter syndrome, and, you know, like, but I do believe doing something for long enough until it becomes a thing is just something you at least owe yourself. So breaking it down is like, once I started doing the animations with stop frame animation, brands started seeing, okay, cool, this guy has a bit of a following, he's doing something unique, and he can tell stories in a shape that, in a flavor that is very different to what we've seen before. And it's very short form content. It's little 15 to 30 second animations, which, I mean, takes a long time, but for brands, they need quick content. So it's like, cool, let's see what happens if I do this. And I'll never forget, man, it was at the end of 2014, just before my whole project finished. I got an email from Christian Dior, the brand, right, in France, And yeah. It was like in this like French broken sort of English. Hello, this man, I can't remember the guy's name, Philippe or something. We'd love for you to create a piece of content, two pieces of content, actually. Stop frame animation of telling the story of Christian Dior going to Japan or something. It was some campaign that they had running and they were from an agency. And I was like, holy shit. This is what I'm going to be doing now. This is like, it just made so much sense to me. I was doing a couple of, you know, websites and stuff on the side, but I was just like, I just switched everything else off. I'm like, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do origami, everything. So what I started doing was, I mean, those jobs would come in, but because I had a bit of a following, I was telling everyone, cool, I'm an artist now. Okay, cool. I'm an origami artist now. And they're like, okay, cool. So you do this like for a living? I'm like, yes, I do. Which I was kind of lying to myself and everyone else, but everyone was like, okay, cool. Well, we've got this project that maybe you can work on. And it just kept coming, man. And obviously, like any business, like any journey that you go on by yourself, there were times where I almost ran out of money. And there were times where I was like, is this really going to work out? And I'll be honest, like there have been times where I've had to go back to being a web developer and putting websites up, particularly during COVID. There wasn't too much going on there. And I fortunately had, you know, a job I could do there. But basically how it works is a client will come to me and say, hey, Ross, we have this campaign and we see that you can design anything out of paper, which I can. We'd love for you to design our logo and tell a bit of a story around this new product that we have, or we'd like to send out this message. And those are the type of you know, brand collabs that I do. And man, I've worked with some amazing brands. Like I've worked with Disney and Pixar. I've worked with McDonald's. I've done Adidas projects. I've done not all international, some of them local. Red Bull. Yeah, the list goes on. And it's every time I get an email or every time I get a request, I light up because I'm like, how is this still a thing? How can I still be folding paper and posting it on Instagram and people are still coming? But what I have realized in the last, I'd say, year and a half, I'm like, okay, cool. This is actually a thing now. And now I'm ready to really ramp it up and just, you know, and that's why I think I'm a lot more comfortable with posting stuff that isn't really origami and maybe just more stop motion focused, because it's like, essentially I've created like almost an agency, because I have people that I work with. I can't do all of it by myself, but taking it from concept to final animation is like, that's what I do now. And it's like, are we going to do a series of animations? Are we going to do one? What's your budget? And how do we want to execute this? Storyboard, the whole deal. It's just like, it becomes essentially like a film production. And then all I get is a little 30 or, you know, 45 second video. And yeah, it's amazing. It's, I love it. It's really, I feel so, so grateful that I've been able to connect with enough people for something like this to happen.
I want to put this in perspective. So, you know, the riches are in the niches. You know, Bruce Lee's, I fear the man that practices one kick instead of, you know, a thousand times instead of a thousand kicks one time, you know. And then there's, I always bring this up, but then there's this great Watanabe in The Last Samurai, you know, he's talking to Tom Cruise and he's looking at the cherry blossom tree and he says, you could spend your whole life searching for the perfect cherry blossom and it wouldn't be a wasted life. You've taken this one thing, this niche thing that was like, you know, dwindled, you know, to say, look, what can I do that would give me this, that is an art, you know, and you create this little, you know, like an origami, you know, a project itself into this whole, you know, kind of lifestyle. It doesn't mean that, like, you know, you're going to become, you know, maybe a billionaire, but then again, you don't give yourself limitations because you don't know what's happening here. But this journey is, you know, you've been so, you know, tunnel focused on like, I don't know, this is just, I'm going to keep going and you keep going and you worked really hard to put yourself in a lucky situation, you know, which is not luck. It's unique.
Well, I mean, you know, luck is where preparation and opportunity meet.
Right. And, concur. And, totally.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's kind of how I just use that. I have a couple of mottos. That's one of them where I'm just like, just keep putting the work out, keep thinking of different ways of doing it. And what I've realized is in the same way that I mentioned to you, origami is a single square sheet of paper that you start with. I now have origami and stop motion animation as the tools. And I think to myself, okay, cool. How do I tell the most effective story? How do I get the message across in the most effective way by just using these two tools, which is how I've got, I guess, stop motion, which is a very delicate and unique form of animation, because it's you know, 3D artists, no offense to them, but they're a dime a dozen. There's a lot of 3D artists out there, and not to take anything away from their work, there's some stuff that people are doing that is mind-blowing, and I follow a lot of these guys. But with stop frame animation, people kind of step away from it. They're kind of like, I don't know about that. It seems like too much work. But for me, I can get past it in the same way that I can sit for hours and hours with a square sheet of paper and fold it. I'm trying to design a cat, for example, at the moment. I'm like, go, go, go. Nope. Next. And what's so great about it is I can do, particularly with origami, is it doesn't take much. I can just pull a piece of paper out of anywhere and start working. I don't need to set up my office and do the whole thing. So I'm always just thinking about this stuff. And I think because I've over the years just been kind of dipping my toe in all these creative pools, I'm able to draw it all now into like story. It's like, and the story is told with moving images, and those moving images happen to be pieces of paper folding in and out of different objects and forms.
There's a poeticism to this, and then there's two different parts of society, many parts of society, but you're dealing with artists, and then you're dealing with conventionality. So you know, when you tell somebody, your family, or maybe, you know, you said you come from a conservative background, you say, this is what I'm doing now. And they're like, oh, come on, Ross. I mean, you know, really? Well, this is who's now calling me. This is what I'm doing. And it's like, okay, you know, but isn't this an interesting dynamic that you kind of, you know, there's a society that you're like, these are my people. This is who gets it. And then there's another, you know, group of people like that don't understand it. Can you talk about the dynamics of that?
I think a lot of people, when I tell them, it's a bit of a cheeky, response to, so what do you do? It's like, oh, fold paper for a living. And I love that because it's like
so simplification of like actually something very complex.
It is a little bit of, because I know where the story is going. It's kind of like I get a little bit of an arrogant, okay, here we go, I'm just about to blow your mind, especially if they don't know.
Depending on who you talk to, though, that's the point, that the mindset of and society differences.
Exactly. But honestly, I have to firstly explain to so many people what origami is. And I'm like, no, it's not the herb that you put in like your dinner. Origami. Okay. So, and then it's like, they listen. Okay, cool. But how do you make money from that? I'm like, well, I tell stories. I work with brands. I have stop frame animation and they still don't get it. And I'm like, and all I do in that, at that moment, I'm like, okay, cool. I'll open up my Instagram account. And I'm like, cool. That's what I do. And it's got sound and there's this whole thing. And by the end of it, they're like, ooh, show me more. You know, like, what else can you do with this stuff? And then they get it. So it's just a case of, it's literally, I guess, with any visual art, like if you can show somebody what you can do, they're like, I get it. I understand this now. A lot of people think that, oh yeah, you've got a decent following on Instagram. Like, does Instagram pay you or do you get ad revenue? It's like, it's not like that at all. Instagram is purely a marketing channel, for me at least. I have tried to put products out, things like, you know, little folded origami pieces in bell jars and whatever. Those were just ways of me, again, trying to, you know, being a creative entrepreneur, trying to make money. I mean, I had to survive. There were times where, you know, doing installations. I've done a lot of installations as well. And that's, to be honest, I make a lot of money from that because I can charge per piece. I can get a whole bunch of people to work with me and the installation goes up for this massive brand. And then it's like, cool.
That was one of my next questions, like the journey of exhibitions and traveling and where is this taking you? Because I've been to art shows in LA where I'm from. And I mean, I could see this being a whole, you know, exhibition and installation, you know, at a large art show and also traveling. To me, you know, it's a romantic art form. Have you gone to the Roppongi district in Tokyo or whatever, to show your exhibition? That's what I'm thinking that this is taking you. Or what does this look like?
Well, you see, this is, again, it's, you know, if you want to, my whole thing is like, I want to be successful. I want to make enough money. I want to be able to, at the end of my life, whenever that is, look back and say, you know what? I worked hard to try and create something unique and I made enough money for myself to feel like I made enough money. That number, you know, floats around. And do I want to be a billionaire? I don't know. maybe. If it comes, then it comes. But I don't want to suffer, and I would like to experience as much as possible. And I want the people around me to have the same, my family and friends as well. So when someone says to me, would you consider doing an art exhibition? Would you consider doing this, that? I always entertain the fact that I might. I'm like, absolutely. Well, let's see how we can break this down. With the exhibition stuff, the reason I think I've kind of stepped away from that is because at the end of the day, I work with paper. And paper, if you've ever had a piece of paper at home that you fold, doesn't quite hold the shape for that long. You know, it's like it, and you can, there are ways of making it a bit more archival. You can, but no one is going to pay $10,000. Well, maybe there is. Maybe someone will. If you're listening and you feel like paying $10,000 for an origami rabbit, I'm your guy. But very few people are going to pay, you know, a lot of money for a little origami, whatever it is, because there's the perception that it's paper. Having said that, I think that because I'm in the tech side and I understand how all this works and a bit of 3D modeling, taking those designs, which I have done, and putting them through a 3D application, be it photogrammetry or whatever, and turning it into a 3D asset and then 3D printing it, using that 3D print to cast it into whatever you want. You can cast it into bronze. You can cast it into chocolate. You can cast it into whatever. So if something like that had to come up as an exhibition idea, I would definitely run with that, because then at least somebody takes, you know, the piece away. And I think that if you get a solid clay or solid bronze or solid gold, whatever, you know, piece, it's like that to me is the physical side of it. I mean, I could go, I went down the whole NFT route as well. So it's like creating sculptures and then linking that sort of thing. But so there's so many ways of going about it. And to say that there is never going to be like a Ross Simmons piece that is worth a lot of money, I don't want to say that. But I think that for me, just creating animations right now is what I need to eat, and I need to get my word out there. So doing an exhibition is like, what is, you know, how much do I get back?
Right.
You know, any efficient system is minimum input in, maximum input out. So the amount of input, and this is my lazy mind thinking and speaking here, because, and I think that's actually what's helped me survive, is learning how to do things as quickly as possible.
How many pieces do you have?
As designs.
No, how many pieces, physical pieces, do you have right now?
Oh, or like around in my house? Very few. I have, So I've got one 3D printer piece, which is an origami crane that I worked with a company in Rotterdam. We created a whole series of
the actual paper, physical pieces.
Physical paper. I've got one crane here. I'm working on a cat, which is in the other room. I've got a goat. And I think my cat just destroyed a pig. I do have one large piece here, which is for a client that I have to deliver tomorrow. Yeah.
I'm not a physical artist, but I just got back from the, I was at the Getty last week with my daughter. I went back to LA. Mm-hmm. You know, the J. Paul Getty Museum is massive, overlooks all of Los Angeles. I mean, there's like 7 or 8, 9 buildings, you know, of this acres and acres of like these most grandiose. And I'm looking at artwork from like 1400s, 1300s, 1500s, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't see a difference between some of the paintings and sculptures and some of the, you know, the things that I saw, and also finding out, you know, like something that's, you know, unique, it may be like, you know, that's been fitted and formed, you know, as far as, you know, what it, some great origami, you know, I don't really see the differential. Like you look at NFTs, you know, so it's like, somebody's like, I don't get that. I was like, well, that's just another digital form. I don't see a difference between that and something sitting on a wall. So, you know, that said, I mean, have you ever, you know, I mean, that to me would seem, you know, well, one is you're talking about there's only so much time, you know, but then again, having these physical pieces that are from small to massive to these installations and art, you know, but then again, you know, like Banksy and you know, and all those guys and Andy Warhol and his, you know, I'm thinking the big Campbell soup, you know, framed, you know, pieces of artwork. I don't see the difference, exactly. You know, and has it ever, you know, kind of crossed your mind and say, yeah, that's an avenue, but then it's time or this, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I've dealt with a lot of artists and I've spoken to a lot of artists, and I see what it has taken for them to break into the art scene. And that is no like easy feat. Honestly, like you've got to put out a body of work. Like maybe there's some people that, you know, overnight successes over 15 years, whatever, you know, that saying. But I just don't know if I have it in me to really create that amount of work and not get the feedback that I need. And that feedback I need comes, I'll be honest, comes a lot of the time through someone telling me, great work, man. Cool. Amazing. Love it. And it's all on Instagram. So, and I really had to separate myself from that, that form of gratification, because that is a slippery slope. If you chase that fame thing and that, like, ooh, well, this how many followers I got, which I've really fortunately had enough people around me to be like, dude, don't change. my brother in particular, he's like, if you go down that route, because he's seen me just try it, particularly like me trying to play music, and it was always this thing that I could do that I could use to, like, oh, look how cool I am, or look how much better I am. And it is. And I've had to become very conscious of that, because I do feel it. I mean, it's like anyone, you get a like from anything. That's the thing. It's social media. It's media that you're putting out. It's social, and you get instant feedback. So back to what you were asking, like, I do an exhibition. The first night of which I've done exhibitions before. And it's kind of like people are like, well, this is cool, man. Thanks. Cool. I'm just going to go finish my beer. Okay. And then it's like, now I have to try and sell this stuff. And trying to break into that, that art space, I think, is not sure if I have I don't even know what it is. Tenacity. I do have tenacity, but it would really require a lot of stuff. So to say that it's never going to happen, I mean, I will never say never. I mean, if I said never, I would never become an origami stop motion animator with 107,000 followers on Instagram. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's all about really just knowing what my strengths are, knowing where I'm going to have the most impact, and also what's going to get me known globally. I can only do it unless somebody invites me to, you know, is it MoMA or some
ACMA, however,
is it Museum of Modern Art? Yeah, MoMA is in I don't know where it is, but anywhere globally.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Like, so a couple years from now, you see you're doing an exhibition, I was like, oh yeah, here's Ross Simmons. I was like, yes, I'll come.
If that is the case, I'll have an NFT of this podcast and be like, you can buy the conversation where it all started. You can buy it for $100 million and give some to Mike too.
Well, as we come to a close though, let's talk about because origami, when I think origami, I think of, you know, Asian art. I think of like an art form that's very, mystic, you know, and like a classy kind of, you know, science, you know, an art form. You know, it's kind of, maybe I romanticize things too much, but like in that movie Last Samurai, you know, say they wake up every day and they dedicate their lives to doing something to perfection. And origami seems to me something that's dealt with, you know, total precision, you know, and something that, you know, where you're looking at, if something's off, it's in centimeters or less than centimeters, mm-hmm. you know. And one little paradigm shift can change, you know, whatever that art form is. I don't know enough to know, but that's the way I look at it. And I think other people look at it that way too. So, do you have a plan to go to Japan? Is there any kind of like, you know, thing like that to where you've talked to people, you know, in this art form? What does that look like?
Yeah, definitely. I've actually been to Japan twice. Okay. So I started my Instagram project coming back from the first time that I went to Japan. So that, I mean, to say that Japanese culture and obviously the art form hasn't inspired me would be a lie. But I think that, you know, I'm not a perfectionist, believe it or not. Like I, for me, it's like done is better than perfect. Because again, with, you know, just the nature of social media, you can put something out. If it's bad, you're only as good as your last post. So if it's bad, make something else. And that'll be like, nobody's going to go like, oh man, but you did that one bad thing. People only remember you for the last, you know, they only remember your last show. So in knowing that, I know that I need to just create as much as possible. And as long as I'm doing better and trying to push the boundaries of how I can blend. I am more interested in how I can use origami in as many places as possible than becoming perfect at origami, because I don't have the patience to become like a master origami artist. I think I know it well enough to know how to design something. And that's my marketing branding brain going like, well, I can design that thing. If someone says, can you design an origami Sonic the Hedgehog, which I did, it's actually on my Instagram, I can do it. So it's there. So, you know, and I think I'm good enough at making it believable that it is the thing. You know, if someone says fold an elephant and I fold something that looks like a cat, they're like, dude, that's not an elephant. You know, so I think I'm quite okay with that. But then like, how do I take this art form? And it always comes back to that. And sometimes I'm like, I just want to break away from this. I want to do something completely different. I just want to go do something with music, or just want to go do something with animation. It always comes back to this geometric origami thing. And I can't ignore that. Yeah. And I think it's because I just want to see how far I can push it. And maybe I've pushed it to the limits. Maybe this is my swan song. You never know. And I'm okay with that, because I know that I have proven to myself that if I set my mind to something, I can do it. I can achieve whatever it is. And even if I don't really know where it's going, at some point I'm going to get an idea. Exactly. Preparation and, you know, opportunity. It's like, cool. Well, he has a lucky, I guess, break, which allows me to pursue this and see how much further I take it. But another thing, something that, you know, anyone who's posting stuff on Instagram and using that as a channel, just a word of, I guess, not warning, but a good suggestion is like, just remember that those people that are following you and liking and whatever are not, firstly, they follow you, but then they are not your followers, because they follow a whole bunch of other people. So don't treat them like you are this an influencer. Man, that word, like I shudder. It goes deep to my core, because we have this culture now of believing that we are influencing people. Are you really? And do you want to be an influencer? Like there's this power thing attached to it.
Right.
The point I'm getting to is those people that are following you decided to push the follow button. So respect that. And if somebody likes something or comments on something, I have responded to every single comment on every single post.
Wow.
Personally, I have. And sometimes I go back to posts where I'm like, oh, I missed this one. Or it's something that, and it bugs me, because I know what it feels like when I comment on somebody's work, be it in passing or, you know, in real life or on Instagram. And I know what it feels like when I don't get a response back. And I just think, yes, if someone's got like 100 million followers or even a million followers, like it must get quite difficult to respond to all that. And I get it. But just the point I'm getting to is just respect the people that are following you. And I think that's what has helped me get to where I am today, because I've connected with people. Every DM I get, I respond to it. Well, not every DM. Some of them are kind of weird, but you see what I'm saying? Like it's just about respecting people as people, even though it is a digital, veil that we are interacting through. It's still people you're dealing with on the other side. So treat them like people.
This is why this is what attracts me to your story. You know, it's basically talking about boundaries and rules and expectations, and you created your own rules. And people say, well, I'm too old to do that. I'm too young to do that. There's too niche. This is not something that, like, you know, there's lack of, like, you have high standards, but you have a lack of rules that limited you to where you do this thing and other people, you know, have ideas. And then it's like, look, this guy did this. Go out and do whatever your idea is. It's your passion. I'm not asking you to quit your job as a doctor, but, you know, and in this day and age where you could find something that's so rewarding and sustainable, and no matter how niche it is, or, you know, I'm not even doing the physical aspect. This is a digital aspect, you know, and then there's a niche within a niche, you know, that you're kind of creating. It's just, to me, you know, this is part of your identity now, and it's really rewarding. So that's what I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have that imposter syndrome that you were talking about, but they also have that internal negative dialogue saying, yeah, I'm too old to do that, or I'm too young to do that, or that's not something that you do, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, there's bigger, you know, problems in the world where people are starving. But when, you know, the majority of people will say, you know, I really like to do that, but I just don't end up doing those things and still one life to live, you know, and they'd be happy if they did.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. And also, I think if you don't know where that thing that you're into is going to take you, do what I did and try and mix it with as many other little things as possible and connect with people. Like, people want to be reached out to. Like, honestly, I when I get a DM from some, I don't even care how many followers they have or what their influence is.
Right.
It's like, it does, it really, I don't care. I'm like, the fact that this person has taken the time to firstly go and look at the work I've done, acknowledge that I can do something that can help them, or, you know, or maybe they can help me. Let's do something together. It's like, it's amazing. I've done that now recently with a lot of the AI artists and guys doing VR and augmented reality stuff. So maybe I'll go into that space as well. But I just love that. I love people and I love interacting with different forms of media. So if you don't know what you're doing and you don't really know how to take it anywhere, tell people what you're doing. Tell them, like, I'm going to do this thing and this is how I'm doing it. And let them watch you get worse and make mistakes and break stuff. And I'll tell you, back to my 365 story, one little mistake I made was, I think it was on the 12th of February, right at the beginning of the project. I had a hangover and I was like, I'm not going to just post the thing. And I had at that stage about 200 followers on Instagram, but I was doing that thing every day. And I skipped a day. And I was just like, no one's going to notice. And a week later, we were sitting around somewhere and this guy said to me, he's like, oh man, I didn't even know who this guy was. He was like a cousin of this guy's wedding who I was at. And he said, you skipped a day the other day. And I was like, whoa, so are you actually following? Like, what? Okay. And from that moment onwards, I realized a few things. But one of them was, when you tell people you're going to do something, just do it, because they will applaud you for it. Not like you should do it for that. You should definitely not do it for that reason. But you will, in some way, shape, or form, create something that is quite extraordinary for yourself.
Agreed. I love it. Ross Simmons, please tell everybody how they could find out more about you, your Instagram, of course, and everywhere else.
Yes. So my Instagram account is, my brand, I guess, origami brand, is White on Rice. I thought it was quite a cool brand name for an origami brand. It's White_on_rice on Instagram. You can mail me. I have a website, whiteonrice.com. It's white-onrice.com. And yeah, if there's anything you want to chat about, if there are any ideas you want to run past me, I really love interacting with people. And if you did listen to what I had to say and something resonated with you, let me know as well. Because I've sent mails like that. I've sent DMs like that. And I would appreciate something like that, of course, if it does resonate with you.
Beautiful. Ross Simmons, thank you so much for sharing today.
Cool. Thanks, Mike.
That was origami artist Ross Simmons. Story might seem simple or complex, depending how you look at it, but I like the story. I like how he turned something so different into something sustainable. One might never think that big companies would start calling him because of what he does, but who knows, maybe your idea, whatever you're thinking out there, if you have an idea and you think, well, I don't know if that's really, I can monetize that or make that, you know, a thing. Look at this guy's story. It's just fascinating. I love this kind of story. He made his own lane. So good for you, Ross. I appreciate it. Thank you for joining us. And I look forward to hanging out with you all on the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.